Welcome back to American Classroom, where we're talking about music education with Jason Barney. I'm here with Lindsey Crosland, who joined me in that interview, and we had a great time. He told us a little bit about his background. We're going to talk about the value of music in the American classroom and maybe look forward to seeing how tech influences maybe the future of education. So I hope you enjoy the episode, and here we go.
Here's actually my story. I went to college, got my instrumental music degree, then went on to work on a master's degree in music theory and composition. Somewhere in the middle there, I got a mortgage.
It happens.
And somewhere along the line, I accidentally started an internet company. So it was a very, very fateful fork in the road for me in my life, to where I had taught some band, and I had taught for years and years private piano lessons. So I had this huge opportunity to teach a lot of kids during that time. But then I kind of left and did some other things, but I never left music. I did when I was doing the .com, I had to leave it for a little while because it took so much energy. But I remember when I finally pulled, you know, everything back out of the closet and got back into it.
So it was more on a private lesson basis.
I definitely, during that time when I was doing the private lessons, now 30 years later, I'll have now grown adults in their 40s and 50s come back to me and say, "Hey, you remember when you taught me, and here's what it did for me, and that was super inspiring." But I've gone on to have a recording studio and spent a lot of time in music production. Basically, a music producer is kind of a music teacher, because I get these vocalists and performers and artists, some of them who are pretty young and unpolished, some of them who are very polished, and I'll be on one side of the glass, they'll be on the other side of the glass. I'm talking into a mic like this, and I'll get into the technical domain. All right, you're pitchy, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. But then I'll get into the artistic domain of, okay, I need more emotion here, I need more inflection here. And so that has been an incredibly rewarding thing to me, because it results in musical outcomes that's now recorded and that you can go back and listen to with high production values. And I've had some really, really rich experiences in terms of using that venue to be able to lift people, but also to be able to give back to the community and to be able to have music be a part of the community conversation. One of the things that I'm super, super proud of is Jared and I and Bill Norton and Barb Stoll.
Remember that.
We were working on Constitution Week for years and years and years together. And I have we all do, have this deep drive to advocate for the Constitution. Talk about culturally something important to say. And even more so today than ever, this thing to defend the Constitution. Well, we all sat together for a long time trying to figure out, how do you talk about the Constitution in the form of music? And at the end of the day, we came up with basically an anthem to the Constitution, a super awesome high production value orchestral, Jordan Bluth on vocal, and it turned out to be, to this day, it's one of the things I'm most proud of what I've been able to be part of creating. But you asked the question, how do we use music to uplift? Your question is probably more focused on the one-on-one basis, but that's something that I think focuses at a larger cultural level, where music inspires emotionally, but music teaches. Music makes a statement. Music says, in this particular case, the Constitution matters, and you better defend it or else.
Years after that was written, didn't a judge pick that up and use it in like a commencement speech, some of the lyrics or a speech that...
Yeah, Judge Janice Brown, and I think she went up all the way to the appeals court, one of the circuit court of appeals or something. And so she was actually for a brief moment under consideration for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
I think she might have at the time been, you know, that didn't pan out, but yeah. She wrote an entire commencement speech, a very beautiful academic dissertation based on the song that we wrote.
Yeah. You know, I think we'll link that in the show notes too with the song.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know how I forgot about that one, but that was a great memory. But I think one of your students was in American Idol just this season.
She's somebody who I produced.
Brian Holt still.
McKenna Brian Holt. So she's somebody who I've had in my studio a lot of times.
A lot with her. Yeah.
Done a lot of production. I've actually had several people that have been either on American Idol or America's Got Talent.
Oh, nice.
That kind of end up there. But McKenna, she just made it to, number five or something before.
Oh, nice.
You know, she hit the end of the line, but she did a fantastic job.
That's great.
A lot of fun.
So you said that music teaches, and I think at the most fundamental in education, right? We learn, what's the, one of the first songs we learn? We learn our ABCs. So associating a rhyme, a song to something we need to learn. They might not understand what the ABCs are, but they understand, like they memorize through attaching it to a song. And so I love that we can utilize music as a teaching tool from like the very earliest ages.
I believe that teaching music for the sake of music is foundational, critically important. It's like any other art form. We teach music because it has intrinsic value in and of itself. But there's all these other things that music can serve other purposes. The right brain, left brain thing. You learn math better when you're also learning, you know, music at the same time. And then also very much what you're talking about at the young people level, the young child level, early childhood development, massive, massive power in music, being able to, you know, reinforce other learning and cognitive skills.
It seems like you can't have a podcast today if you don't talk about AI. So let's talk about AI and music and or music education.
We just went from ABCs to AI. Okay,
AI.
Here we go.
I know. Big jump. What initial thoughts on AI? Both of you, I'd love to hear your initial thoughts on AI. Jason, let's just start with you. And what are you seeing right now? It's
my personality is, I've never been one to be afraid of new technology. I'm always an early adopter. I started a .com before anybody knew what email was or what a website was. That's always been me. Even in fifth grade, I have these memories of me pulling apart boom boxes and guitar amps and different things. I tried to build a recording studio in my bedroom out of guitar amps and boom
Didn't
boxes.
Didn't you invent mixtape?
Yeah, that'd be me. Yeah, sure.
I thought there was Chris Pratt.
So technology is I'm a technologist. I love it, but I'm also acutely aware of the dangers. Social media is a prime example of that. Not that I was never like one of these passionate adopters of social media, but, you know, I do it like everybody else. But I've seen how, you know, there's been some good that's come of social media, but just socially, just huge harm to youth, harm to our political discourse. There's so many things where, you know, we've had some meltdown based on technology. But then on the other hand, you look at what we can do with technology that just never existed. Now let's apply that to AI and apply that to music. Well, first of all, look what technology's done for music. Before we get to AI, what has technology done for music over the past 20 years? Well, the fact that people can have more horsepower on a laptop in their bedroom to create massive orchestral masterpieces or pop song masterpieces or rock song masterpieces in a way that was just completely inaccessible 20 years ago is phenomenal. And there's a whole other podcast that I can just talk to you about the lineage of how all this technology kind of evolved and came together and where we are, where we're at today. And it's just super awesome, super cool. Now, AI. First of all, does anybody really quite yet even know what AI is? I'm not totally sure that we do. We say it. But I remember when people didn't know what email was. I remember when people didn't know what a website was, and I would try to explain what it could be, and then I wasn't even totally getting it either until, you know, the thing evolved, and now they're a staple of our life. AI is a tool and a technology. It absolutely has great potential for danger. It actually has great potential for harm. It also, as a tool, it has great potential for utility and advancement and learning and growing and being able to be more productive. So I'm not afraid of it per se, but there's a huge amount of caution that I would certainly hope that we would have. But let me give you an example. Apple Logic Pro is a piece of software that you can pay $300 for. And once you pay the $300, you get it for life. It's in perpetuity. Some of these great Grammy-winning albums that are getting created by Jacob Collier and Billie Eilish and whatever, they were created with Apple Logic Pro.
Oh, 300 bucks.
Yeah, 300 bucks. And it's super powerful, super amazing. Well, they just came out with the latest version here about a month ago. They now have an AI bass player. So you just kind of, I don't even know, I haven't tried it yet, but you somehow kind of set it off in the right direction and it'll start playing the bass for you. And they have an AI keyboard player. So guys like me who are keyboard players, you know, what does that mean for us? I don't know. We'll find out. And for years, it's also had a pretty, I don't know if they called it an AI drummer, but it was something that where it could kind of intuitively kind of make, you know, drums and fills, drum patterns and fills and things. Mm-hmm. Does that replace the bass player and the keyboard player and mean that from now on, the whole idea of human creativity and human talent is out the window? I hope not. I mean, that's part of the joy of music is that creative process. And I will tell you, when I look at the music industry as it sits today, there's a percentage of it that supports the Taylor Swifts and the A-list top, you know, whatever. But there's this massive segment of the music industry that caters to people who will never be great, but there's so much passion in the creative process that they want that Logic Pro on their laptop in their bedroom to be able to create that. Can AI help enhance that experience for them, help them learn what bass lines really could be like so that they can learn how to do their own bass lines? I think there's going to be a give and take in there. One of the things that I rely on now quite heavily is I like to orchestrate. I like to write orchestral pieces. There's software now that I can open up my notation software. I use Sibelius. Finale is a really good one too, where I can put my notation in there, and there's an AI algorithm called Note Performer that can go and read that and know, okay, I put a pianissimo here and a forte here, so let's get that violin to crescendo in just a certain way that responds in a more humanly musical way. Is it truly humanly and perfect like a true orchestra would be? No, not at all. But is it a heck of a lot better than what we had a few years ago? So it helps me visualize orally more effectively where this thing is going. And there's a new feature that it came out where it bridges that to these sample libraries where somebody's recorded a full orchestra with London Symphony Orchestra and Air Studios and then another orchestra in the Sony, you know, cinematic recording studio in Hollywood where there's like live orchestras that got recorded every little note and nuance of every violin and trombone and everything. Now this AI is bridging my Sibelius software notes to that. This is powerful stuff. Yeah. This is helping. That now becomes a tool for young people to learn how to do orchestration that was unthinkable back when I first learned orchestration 30 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like it's an amplifier of bad stuff if people want to use it for that, to your earlier point. Or maybe it'll amplify someone who's interested in music but doesn't really know where to start. But also those that are truly creative, they're in there, they may have a big theoretical background, and they can take their unique abilities and creativity and just put them on a different level because they just have more access. I mean, it's going to be exciting to see what AI brings to music.
If I was a 15-year-old kid today, I would accelerate to my aspirations in music significantly faster. You said amplify, that's the word. I would accelerate to my musical aspirations so much faster, not just because of AI, but because of technology in general. And now it's just AI is just another layer on top of it. So it's a tool.
Yeah, amazing. Anything? What?
Oh, I just think as far as like integrity in the music industry, I think it'll be interesting, right? I can tell AI to write me lyrics to a song about a particular topic, to a certain tune, right? It will instantly create lyrics for me. It can write compositions. So it's like where do we maintain that uniquely creative part of ourselves where we do the work and we create versus just turning it over to AI to fill those pieces. But it does fill the gap for a lot of people who might not have all the resources. Say I write a piece and I want to know what it sounds like. Oh, let's bring in the bass. Let's bring in the keyboard. And now I can hear what my piece sounds like. Okay, let me go back and redo it. Versus if I don't play the bass, play the keyboard, and I'd have to wait to hear what it sounded like together. So it's a great tool, but it'll be interesting to see like where the integral part of it lies.
I have a hard time believing that I'm ever going to be truly, deeply, emotionally moved by an AI-generated vocal.
It's hard to see it.
I just don't see it. And there's a new software I just tried out about 3 weeks ago. It's a AI vocal thing where you take... They've got this whole library of vocalists that kind of put their model in the system. And then you actually draw in MIDI notes. You can draw in inflections to make them crescendo and do this and do that. You can shape the expression of it. Now I'm a recording studio producer. I spend a bazillion hours in the recording studio with real vocalists, yeah, with real talent, saying, okay, give me some more inflection there, fix your pitch right here, give me more attack right there, more on that consonant there, and have them dig deep in their soul and come out with something that's emotionally authentic and compelling. So I know what it's like to do the real deal, but I also tried this, you know, goofy little AI thing, and it didn't take very long. We're like, but you know, the technology is going to get better, but is it ever going to get to where it's going to be as compelling to me as the other? Same thing goes for the orchestration. This stuff that I'm doing with Note Performer and AI and all that stuff, you think I'm going to release that as quote unquote my final master symphony? No, it's going to be a tool for me to make sure it's where I want it to be, but it won't be my master symphony until I've gone to a real orchestra with real human beings, with real souls, strike that bow, hit that drum, and that's when it's real. So I don't see how AI replaces that.
It'll be interesting to see how that works. One of my hopes with AI and blockchain and even the legal environment is that it'll protect the creative work of musicians and artists. And because it's all going digital, so that's where blockchain has the ability to track it. And so let's take a painting that an artist paints. If he sells it in the blockchain, he can write that contract so that every time it's sold, he continues to get a commission off of that. Same thing with a musician. And the legal environment is catching up to that, because in the past, creatives could sell their music once. And then the resale at Zia Records or the other resale places.
Zia who?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they never got any residuals, although that's their work. And now, you know, with iTunes, that was a big game changer, and what Taylor Swift did to change that, you know, they're starting to get more of, you know, some, I guess it'll, I'm hoping the economics will help bolster the creatives, and therefore they'll have a stronger impact on our culture as we kind of are looping back here a little bit, because they're getting the resources that they've been deprived in when we cut education or cut spending in education, music education in schools, or culturally you don't see a lot of sustaining of community theater or community arts programs because the economics are typically kind of wonky in that space. And maybe that'll help change it.
And there's a whole nother, you know, sidebar we can get on the economics and music, and maybe I'll hit some high level stuff. But to your point about the blockchain and the licensing, this AI vocal software that I just did, I had to sign a license agreement that if I'm going to use, so this vocalist has one set of licensing terms, another vocalist has a different set in terms of where I can use them and what kind of context I can use. And there is a compensation that rolls back. But let me take that back a little bit. I mentioned a minute ago this thing where they go do what's called a sample library of an orchestra, where they take the violins and they play every note, every inflection, every dynamic, and then they go through the whole orchestra, every trombone, trumpet, you know, mallet, instrument, whatever. You build this huge sample library that now a producer like me can sit on my computer and say, play the violin note here at this volume, blah, 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 and build a whole orchestration around that. A company called Spitfire is really the leading library provider for that kind of thing. There are some other good ones, but they did this thing where, okay, if we're going to do that, are we putting, you know, violin players out of work because now these samples are so dang good, we don't need to hire the violinist anymore? Well, truth be told, you still need the real violin player. Right. But they did this thing where they would pay a royalty to whoever was in that session to create that sample library. Those musicians are getting a royalty every time that sample library gets sold. Now, how does that multiply over time, and does it really translate into real income for those musicians? I don't know. But the economics of music have changed dramatically, and probably not in the favor of the artists that are making the music. Certainly, you know, at the upper level, the Taylor Swifts of the world are just insanely well compensated, but you get very much farther down. Yeah, there is no more money to be made on CDs because there are no more CDs. And, you know, streaming and Spotify and all that, you know, pays the artist a fraction of these things. So that begs a whole other question. And let's bring this back to, you know, we're talking about music in the schools. Do you only teach things that have vocational value that can provide a student with a path to subsistence.
Monetize it, yep.
Yeah, monetization, subsistence. Or is there educational value in teaching people that may or may not have the monetizing value? The reality is there's a lot of people today who actually do make a good living in music. I know some people who make a lot better living than I do in music, who are close personal friends. In fact, the guy who orchestrated Portrait Stone, he's one of those guys. He's done very well for himself. There's also a lot of people who they'll never really make any kind of real living at music, but they sure as heck are going to make a life out of music and to make a life for their families and their communities and their church groups and
that the traditions sort of and the culture that they build in their homes and
so
family.
So there is a place to make a living at music, and there's a place that goes way beyond just the subsistence level.
Well, let's talk about the home and the school, and at least those that are just getting, if there's an individual, let's say a mom or a dad who has a young child and they want to have their child have a good music experience, music education experience. I'd like to talk a little bit about what advice would you give them to think about, or anything to add. You've already given some good tips, but anything else you would add? And then I also want to talk a little bit about school leaders and give them some advice on music education. But let's start with the home in terms of building that up. Do you want to start?
I can start.
Yeah.
I'm not a music teacher by education, right? But from a very young age, I would do a free like music time at our community center, and I'd bring the shakers and I'd bring the music on my phone and I would play it, and all the moms in the community who wanted to come, just a free thing, bring their toddlers, you know, introducing our kids to tempo and beat and songs and, you know, stomp and roar and do these things and move in a circle and dance. And so like introducing them to these concepts, and then, you know, just by listening and experiencing it. And then, of course, it can happen in your own home. You know, you can sing to your child in the womb. Yeah. You can play an instrument. But then, yeah, like, you know, is it something that when everyone gets home from school, at the end of the workday, I feel like I've always had music in my home. I play the piano a little bit. I play the guitar a little bit. And so I think, you know, parents can do that or just play music. I know some parents, I have a brother who's like, we don't sing, we're all terrible, we can't get the note right. You know, like, but I've heard them sing and it's beautiful, and like we're all blessed when we hear them, you know, and music in their home. And so anyway, I think even if someone's like, oh, I can't teach music in my home because I, you know, I'm not talented in these fields, I think we can still share it. You know, we can still sing along. So I think in the home, if we're going to start there, I think just I've had a good experience as a parent introducing my kids to music, and they've seemed to love it, and they'll, you know, play the recorder. My daughter's taking piano lessons. My son's taking piano lessons. And I think that's just kind of the beginning. They're still young.
So. Yeah, home is the first and the best school ever.
You got right? That
it
right.
Always is. And everything else supports that. But how, what would you add?
What I'd say is think about the life experiences of different parents and kind of think of different types of parents in terms of their knowledge and understanding of music specifically and how they can bring that into the home. You've got the super music nerd parents who hardcore background in music and they know exactly how to bring that music into the home and get the right teachers and get the right lessons and get the right practice discipline and get to the right whatever. And they're playing the right music in the home and they're doing it. So that's awesome. But that statistically is definitely not the majority of the population. It's quite rare. Then you got the next kind of group of parents who they got a pretty good understanding of music, enough to be a really good influence. They probably don't have all that rigor behind them to really get, you know, to the best of the best of the method of the path, but it's pretty good. But then you got parents who they just don't know music, because culturally, music is always kind of getting pushed to the edge of the education process, always getting pushed to the edge of the culture. And so there's a lot of people who grew up to be parents and they don't know it, but in their heart that they know that they want their kids to know it. So the passion is there, the belief is there, but the skill set isn't quite there. So I was fortunate to have a grandpa who played saxophone, taught me how to play, that's great. But my dad, he loved music, but he wasn't very skilled. Cowboy Jim from Rockin' a Ranch is his cousin. Jim's this great musician. Jim would tell the story of my dad growing up, how Jim could just play anything, do anything. He would try to teach my dad how to play bass lines, and my dad would go, he couldn't get it. And Jim's like, well, what's wrong with you? Can't you just hear it? And my dad couldn't hear it. But now my dad's my dad, and I remember him trying to teach my brother and I how to play the guitar the best he could. It just, and it was the same. He would try to teach us football and baseball, and it was kind of funny because he was so not an athlete, but he tried. Well, can you hold the ball like this? And he did the same thing with the guitar. So the parents, if they have a passion for their kids and a belief that those kids need those deep principles to come from not just music, but all the different parts of, you know, what a good education should be, they're going to do the best they can. But that's still not enough. Those parents, if they're wise, will still figure out how to find a good teacher. And this is where I go back to how important the school curriculums are. Make sure that their schools are dead serious about their music programs and preserving those music programs and growing those music programs. And if they're not, think about maybe finding a school that is. Yeah. Because I had an experience probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago where in the Gilbert Public School District, there was a real movement to just really concentrate just on the core, what they called the core STEM stuff, which I've mentioned earlier today that I disagree with that philosophically. But there are people who believe that music is just incidental, elective, ancillary, hobby. These are derogatory terms to me, as in fighting words. And they were actively trying to cut down the elementary music program like significantly, and that's a domino effect. You cut your elementary program, you just cut your junior high program. You cut your junior high program, you just cut your high school program. And somewhere in the middle of that, Common Core comes along, and now they got this like regulatory beast coming at them to further gut these other things that I view as foundational and core. I and some other people, we went hardcore trying to advocate passionately, protect those music programs. Do not cut those music programs. Those are foundational. And so sometimes there could be a parent out there who doesn't know diddly dang about music, but he knows the importance of it and can be out there advocating to make sure that those local schools are making music an essential part of the curriculum.
I love to see the sports parents who their child has no interest in sports. Right, they were the quarterback of the football team or whatever, you know. The mom's, you know, the famous track athlete, and their child, they have no interest in athletics, and they're sitting there in the band concert. They look so uncomfortable, but they love the fact that they're making some sounds on the piano, it happens a lot of time, and I just commend them for keeping an open mind that, you know, not everybody's created equal in terms of their unique abilities and talents and the home. Please.
Oh, I love what you shared. I fall into that category. That resonates with me, where you talk about a parent who is like not super talented in music. That's me. But I feel like it's so important and foundational for children. And so I think that's why I kind of brought up like free resources in the community. Find ways to introduce music to your children. And then make sure you're shopping a school that has a good music program so that they can get those fundamentals into their school. And, you know, I'm grateful for people like you who do advocate and go and fight for music programs in the schools, because I feel like it's an essential part of their education for sure.
Yeah. And if you're a school leader that's struggling with your administration on preserving the arts, just know that there's people in your community that will advocate. There's people that will go to the school boards and give your music program voice. There's also people that will come into your schools and volunteer to do music programs. That happens all the time. Musicians have an abiding passion for music, and just get to know them. I know when I sat on the state board, we had the music standards, the art standards come up. And that was one of the big things that I looked at when I looked at the standards. It says I wanted to make sure there were no fences on the creativity, making sure that the music program, the music leaders, the arts program, you know, they had a lot of latitude to change and move their programs to the best interests of their particular community. And so that's how we designed it from the state level. And I don't know what other states do. That's just Arizona's standards. Is really, it was just trying to move people up levels and making sure they had broad exposure to various genres or themes within particular arts, in terms of trying to dictate, oh, this is what arts looks like in Arizona. Now, you know, we stepped way back from that so the local communities could imprint what works for them. Like, school leaders need to know that this is an important part of their program. Their community is behind them. It's supporting them. And schools get too wrapped up in policy that focuses them on test scores or jobs training, workforce development, which is also important at the expense of their arts programs. But it's also at the expense of their learning in their school.
We have a contradiction in our culture that one side of the contradiction is that music and arts get marginalized, and the other side of the contradiction is that music and arts are foundational and central to everything that we do. You think about how much music plays into our lives. We exercise to it. We worship to it. We party to it. Imagine a movie without music. Imagine TV shows without music. You just go on and on. If you deleted music from our world, it's a dry and bleak place. And so there's this side of us that culturally it's everything to us. It's a basic human hunger to us. But then there's this other thing where music is this weird thing that a lot of people don't understand. So they're like pushing away. you notice that there's like how many ESPN 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 is going at any given time about all the different sports, you know, commentary going on. You know, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. They're talking about so-and-so athlete did such and such a play 4 days ago. And how do they have that for music? They don't have that for music. There's no like 24/7 hour commentary. Did you hear that French horn played the other night in New York? Oh my gosh! Did you hear what he did to the Mahler too? That was incredible. You know,
instant replay.
You know, the closest I ever found to that is you can get it on like Roku or your Amazon Fire Stick. There's a little channel called The Circle. Have you ever watched that?
No.
All right, The Circle. And what it is, it's the Grand Ole Opry station. And so they have a lot of supplementary programming in there, but that's where they show the Grand Ole Opry shows, the live ones or the recorded ones. But you're right, they're hard to find, and you don't see them a lot. But we should.
To kind of play the thought out, part of that is just, I think, if you think different personalities connect with, like I said earlier, that, you know, some kids connect with music, other kids connect with sports. There's nothing wrong with the fact that there's so much cultural interest in sports. In fact, my situation is I have a son who's like hardcore into sports, knows every stat, knows everything. He lost the lottery with his dad because just like those kids who have a passion for music, but their parents don't know. Well, this is the other way around for me. Sports are very important. They're a very important part of our culture. They're a very important part of our economy. There's so many reasons why that's important. So this is not this versus that, but I had an experience in high school. I was the drum major. We were doing our halftime show, and we weren't done with our show. And all of a sudden, the football team kind of runs out in the middle of our show. Like, you guys are supposed to be done. It was an illustration of how music was viewed, and music is kind of marginalized. And I remember our band director, Phil Hatler, he went and rectified that situation with the coach.
How did that go over?
There was a cultural shift at our school. Yeah. And I was an absolute music nerd, but I was unnerdy enough that I could actually go hang out with the jocks. And so I kind of went out of my way to be part of that. Hey, you know, guys that are on the football team, we're friends, and we kind of helped shift that culture. But there's a thing going on in Salt Lake right now. You know, the hockey team just moved to Salt Lake, and there's this big conversation going on about, where are we going to build that the hockey stadium, and how are we going to do this total redevelopment thing in the middle of the downtown? And I remember I'm a land developer, so I know all about.
Oh, yeah, you want to push it all. You're the bad guy here.
Well,
right?
I know all about land, you know, how this works. But right on the primo corner of this whole thing where you got, you know, the Delta Center and all that, Abravanel Hall, the Symphony Hall. So there was this big, and it's starting to die down now, but there's this big, huge argument and debate. Everybody everybody's like, yeah, we'll just knock that thing over. We don't need that thing. So this is kind of like the metaphorical equivalent of the football team rushing out onto my marching band show, right? Why don't we need a symphony hall? What's that all about? Just knock that thing over, and we'll just put this hockey stadium right there across from Temple Square, Kitty Corner. Now, since then, a lot of people come forward and really advocated for how important music and the culture is in that part of the community, and how it's absolutely needed to be preserved. So, but it's interesting that we had to have that conversation. It's interesting that we had to have that trauma. Us people who love and advocate for music, and I've been to that hall, you know, so many times. I love the musical experiences that I've had there, and the fear that went through me when I heard that might get knocked over for a hockey stadium. I like hockey too. Yeah. My son-in-law is a big hockey fan up there. This is great. We'll go to the hockey game, but let's also go to the symphony, you know, the next night. But it's an interesting thing that on the one hand, our culture marginalizes music and the arts, but on the other hand, we fully embrace it. And what does that mean for education? It means that I come back to the importance of the music teacher. The music teacher is the final last stand in being that anchor for every next generation to be the ones who say, oh, you know what, that concert hall is important. Not only that, I go to that concert hall and I listen to the symphony orchestra there.
And we're taking a field trip there.
You are?
No, I'm saying like...
Oh, yeah, and the music, you are. Oh, good.
And the music teacher... and the music teacher is taking the students to that symphony hall to experience it and have moments like you had as a child.
As a child at Gamage, which is another one of those concert halls. And so,
exactly.
So that's not a negative on sports. And it's not even a negative on our culture. But it's an observation that says we need, as a culture, with our music teachers and our music programs being the front line of it, to more deeply ingrain the intrinsic value of this. Yes, we need it because the synapses and the right brain and left brain and the tactile, we need all that. And learn math better. But music for the sake of music is intrinsically as valuable as math for the sake of math. It doesn't help, you know, our sewer lines work any better, but it helps our souls breathe more open and sing more open and have more joy.
I love that. I love that. Jason, thank you for being here with us. This was great. It's always fun to talk music with you, and there's lots more to cover, but appreciate the time that you spent with us, and appreciate any listener who's been with us and love to hear your comments and feedback on music education. And if you'd like to hear Jason talk about some more, maybe we'll see if he can come back sometime and talk about some other things. So, but thank you for that. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please subscribe and follow and all those good things. It helps American Classroom get to more people, and more people learn about the importance of music education. So Jason, thank you very much. And Lindsay, it's always good to be here to talk about how we can strengthen education and building American culture in our society today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.